WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Dr. Elizabeth Buckley, mezzo-soprano. We're talking about using music for advocacy and outreach. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
And the doctorate is fairly recent.
Fairly recent, yes, but took many years to complete. Well, lovingly so.
Why did it take so long?
I had my two children in the midst of it. The second was a surprise. The first was planned, but both very well loved and very much the inspiration for finishing.
And you have a doctorate in a DMA, a doctorate of the musical arts in what?
We call this at the U of I a performance degree with an emphasis in literature. And I was able to, with my committee support and help, to write a full dissertation on the works of Elizabeth Claude Jacquet de la Guerre. And I wrote my dissertation on her sacred cantatas. So they were very interesting works composed for a girls' school during Louis XIV's reign.
And she's not a composer I know of. Say a couple more words about it. It's not your whole dissertation.
Oh, certainly not. What's very interesting about her is she was granted a kind of carte blanche treatment throughout the court. She lived by herself in Paris while the court moved to Versailles, and this gave her time to compose her own music. And her music, in its own right, is stunning, just beautiful. And I performed one of her works on my doctoral recital to a great reception. People were very impressed with the quality of it and the depth of it. And this summer, I'm going to have the opportunity to record these works with Charlotte Maddox Mersch, who was on the faculty at the U of I harpsichord.
And your doctorate was here at the University of Illinois, as well as your master's. Where was your undergraduate study?
At a small Lutheran college in Columbus, Ohio. It's called Capital University, and it is right next door to the seminary there, Trinity Lutheran Seminary, where my stepfather received his MDiv.
His divinity school degree, he's a pastor?
Yes, he is a Lutheran pastor, and I am raised in the Lutheran church. And I think part of my coming to seeing that the arts can be used for advocacy and outreach have a direct component and influence from my Lutheran upbringing.
And currently you are it's not a full-time position, but it's a part-time position as director of music at St. Matthew's Lutheran.
St. Matthew Lutheran in Urbana. Previously, I was the director of music at Good Shepherd Lutheran. I was there for 10 years as the organist, 7 years as also the director of choirs, and then took a little time off after I had my second child, and then received a wonderful invitation to come to St. Matthew and direct their adult choir there.
And you mentioned you play organ, pipe organ. You also play the piano, and you're a violinist.
Yes, when you're a pastor's daughter, you're told to get up on that organ and play. So I was fortunate to take organ lessons at the young age of 14, and was very blessed with a gorgeous tracker organ that was at Ohio Wesleyan, just up the hill from where my father's church was. So I would drag my organ bag up there late at night, and I was one of probably the only high school student to have keys to this gorgeous tracker organ.
Who made it?
Oh, goodness. I forget the maker, but he's a German maker, and they flew him over, and he stayed for over a year to construct the organ, and it was magnificent.
Wonderful. Which instrument did you learn first? Violin?
Piano. Piano. And then I took violin. We were fortunate in our school system. We, in third grade, took either a band instrument or a string instrument. And I took violin from a wonderful teacher. And I would have to say now, looking back, you know, via many of my Facebook friends from high school, most of us have a connection with the arts in one way or another. And I would credit that to our wonderful string and band program and our wonderful theater program.
Although learning music and the arts early seems to benefit people who go into things very different from music.
Oh, exactly. And I think that it makes people who not only love music but understand the value of music.
It seems to be good training for even accountants.
Oh, exactly. There are many, many qualities in music that make for a deeper understanding of mathematics.
You recently won a important award and had your first chance to sing, where was it, Carnegie Hall?
At Carnegie Hall, yes.
Tell us about that prize.
It was the Barry Alexander International Vocal Competition, and I entered it basically thinking that it would be something fun. And then when I received notification that I had won first prize, I was elated, and it was a great opportunity to sing not only at Carnegie, but I think it's an opportunity to play in the with the big kids on the playground in New York City. And most importantly, I think it's that legacy of singing at Carnegie. It's such a gift to be there and to see the pictures of those who have been there before. And while I was there, James Levine was conducting a performance, a rehearsal, actually, and a good friend of friends of mine, Michelle DeYoung, was there practicing. They were singing Mahler. And to me, to get to see these greats on stage is just an amazing opportunity.
And how do people there treat folks from far away?
Oh, I think we are all lovers of music, and the repertoire that I chose for the recital had a very intense and very personal message, and I tried to program pieces that were both operatic and oratorio and art songs, too. So it was a varied program that showed, hopefully, a lot of depth of expression. And my voice instructor, who is also on faculty at the U of I, Cynthia Heyman Coleman, told me, which I think is just so lovely, she's also a mother, she said, take all of your life experiences, take those and put those into your singing. And so I tried to go there and to express all of the things I have experienced in life, all the gifts I have been given, and this wonderful opportunity.
The scriptures that were read in many churches, many Christian churches this morning, for those who follow the lectionary, included two passages, both the Psalms and the Isaiah passage, that referred to God being like a mother.
It's beautiful. I think that's a wonderful thing for us to remember, because Jesus does say in the gospel to bring all the children to him, that not one of us should be left out of that invitation. And I think if we think of God in those terms as a mother, then we realize that that mother brings every child, and we all have a place.
There are, of course, many masculine images for God in the Christian scriptures, but there are feminine images too, and they're quite powerful, showing God's nurturing, God's compassion, and those kind of experiences that a mother has can reveal very important things, I think, about the nature of God. We're talking with Elizabeth Buckley about music as advocacy and outreach, using music for those purposes. Listeners are invited to join this conversation. This is a live call-in show every Sunday night here on WILL AM 580 and heard also simultaneously at 90.9 FM HD3 if you have that HD radio in your home. These programs can also be heard when they are archived, which will happen in about a week for this program, maybe sooner, at will.illinois.edu/keepinthefaith. And you can hear this program at your convenience on your portable device or your computer, all kinds of ways to hear these programs at your convenience. Phone numbers, if you'd like to call in today, 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana area. If it's long distance, punch in 1-800-222-9455. We'll be happy to have you join this conversation. Liz, you brought a CD along of now this is will be coming out for the public soon. When will it be available?
Presently, I'm shopping it around to different labels. I have six different labels, and one of the artists on the CD is a loved favorite here in Champaign-Urbana. This is the violist Masumi Perostad, and he'll be on the second piece that we play. The first piece is from Handel's Messiah, But Who May Abide, and it is with piano accompaniment. One of my dear friends, DeWitt Tipton, who's on faculty at Furman, came up for a week, and we had Krannert Great Hall signed out for that time. When we came to the hall to begin recording, all the lights were off, and there was only the lone stage light. And that morning, John Chernoff, who was a loved sound engineer at Krannert, their head sound engineer, had unexpectedly passed away that morning. So we started the recording a couple hours late, but Jeff Sahos, who was his apprentice and knew all of the miking placement that I had talked with John about doing for the recording, was able to put the mics out, and we continued. And it was very interesting. Usually in that hall, you don't hear the thunder, but we had one of our classic summer thunderstorms, and we had to interrupt our recording because of the thunder. And we really felt like perhaps that was John wanting to be a part of our recording after all. So it was a very meaningful 4 days of recording. And this particular piece, I think, has not only the power that I wanted to demonstrate, but the message, But Who May Abide?
George Frederick Handel from The Messiah.
For he is like a strike a refiner's fire, like a refiner's fire, and who shall stand when he appeareth, and who shall stand when he appeareth, for he is like a refiner's fire, and who shall stand when he appeareth, when he appeareth, for he is like a
Elizabeth Buckley, mezzo-soprano, singing from Handel's Messiah, But Who May Abide? Elizabeth, when we see a soprano standing in that crook of the piano and giving the accompanist a look and then the music starts, those of us who go to concerts are curious, how much practice with just the two of you together happen before that can occur?
Well, I think they say that it takes at least 10,000 hours to master any given area or field. And if you add up the amount of hours that you study personally by yourself as a singer, and then what singers do that further complicates our instrument is we sing in languages. And therefore, we have to not only be comfortable singing in our native tongue, English, it is imperative that we are comfortable singing in Italian, in German, French, and then many of us sing also in Russian. And I spent a good deal of time living in Hungary, so I had to learn how to sing in Hungarian also. So I think that further complicates and also adds a wonderful level of understanding, because when we are performing our music, we're singing texts.
Now, all that's to learn your craft, but what about you've done all that, the pianist has done all that, who's going to accompany you or have this duet with you, and then you pick the music, or the two of you pick the music. How much then do you have to work together just on that one piece, like the one we just heard?
For that recording, I spent about 6 months picking out the repertoire that I felt best represented the pieces that I wanted to record and also I connect with. And I think young artists begin doing music that their teachers tell them to do.
Sure.
And you hope that you're working with an instructor that understands your talent and your background and gives you repertoire that works for you. When I think you walk out and fully take responsibility for your art form as a true artist, you start to select those things that mean something to you. And so I was in contact with my accompanist, and I worked with him when he was here in graduate school, so we had a wonderful working relationship. And what we did each day we recorded is we spent 3 to 4 hours previously before the recording practicing. And I sent him the scores before that. He probably spent a good 20 hours practicing before he came here, knowing him as I do. And then I spent a good, I would say, 4 to 6 weeks practicing, and that would be 4 to 5 hours a day. And really, to practice as a singer, you don't want to sing through those entire 4 hours. You do study, you do warm up. And so it really is a labor of love that you spend, I would say, for a recording at the short, I would say 150 hours perhaps preparing. I would say it would be hard to even add up the hours, because also there are lessons and there are study that you do on the languages that you're singing in the texts too.
When when you won this prize, the Barry Alexander International Vocal Competition, and incidentally, listeners can learn more about Elizabeth. Her biography is too long for me to go through for the show, but you can go to her website, elizabethbuckley.com, and that Buckley is spelled B-U-C-K-L-E-Y. And at elizabethbuckley.com, you can read about her other many accomplishments. But Elizabeth, we want to talk about how music is used and how you hope to use music in the next few months, reaching out to the community. Tell us about that.
I have seen some of my dear friends who are having really illustrious careers in music. They have served as great examples for how you can take your art form and move it from just something to promote yourself to things that you want to promote outside. And so what I've done recently is I authored a grant for the Urbana Public Arts Grants, and it is a grant that integrates a concert I did for the Mills Breast Cancer Institute music series, which Barbara Hedlund has been heading up, and it's a great music series. If you're interested, those concerts are at noon at the Mills Breast Cancer Institute every Wednesday.
That's in Urbana, Illinois, yes.
Exactly. And what is so wonderful about these is it gives artists a chance to perform different recitals and to highlight their talents. So I took a recital that I programmed last summer, and it's called Songs from a Mother's Heart, and they are songs focused on songs that we sing to children, some lullabies. I also have the two songs of Brahms with viola. In this case, I did them with Barbara on the cello, and they worked beautifully with cello also.
You just lowered your voice appropriately.
Actually, the cello did, but yes, it was beautiful. And what we did with this is then I had also a couple Disney songs on there that little kids would know, and then a couple of songs, one song, He's Got the Whole World in His Hands. And there were several kids in attendance, and it was really fun to see their interaction. So I've taken this recital, and with the grant that I authored, I want to do a series of recitals around Urbana at the schools and in different public locations. I want to then use those as advocacy and outreach for Crisis Nursery and for CASA. And I have been talking with a good friend of mine, Jennifer Gungey-Balsrud. We would like to then run a contest with her graphic design art students where they would make a projection of images of these facilities, and perhaps we could even add some more facilities on in the future. And what we'd like to do is highlight what is available in our community for young families who may have special needs, and for them to know that they have places to go within our community. And we'd also like to hand out pamphlets and to have images of the workers at these facilities too.
And for local people or folks who are within driving range of Urbana, Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, do you have some dates and times and places at this point?
We don't yet. We're going to wait and see if we receive this grant.
Okay.
If we don't, we're going to look for alternative funding, and we want to do it as a benefit fundraising concert for these organizations. And I also have a couple other great events that are coming up to help groups in town that I support and really enjoy working with. On March 12th, which is a Friday, at 7 p.m., I will be singing at the Indigo Gallery with Masumi and also with William Kinderman. We're going to be doing the Brahms two songs that I talked about earlier, the Zwei Gesange, which I recorded on my album this summer with Masumi. And we're going to be doing this concert as a benefit concert for the Public Art League. And if you know about them, they're a great group. A good friend of mine, Eric Robeson, started this. And what's great about them is that they are wanting to put large pieces of artwork sculpture throughout Champaign. And they did that this past year. And they're looking to keep those installments here by raising funds to actually purchase them. And I'm a big supporter of putting not only live performing art out there, but wonderful visual art for our community. So that's a great cause, and that'll be coming up on March 12th at Indigo Gallery.
What time will that be, Elizabeth?
7 p.m.
And you have some other things coming up locally?
I do. I also have another project that's still, a lot of these projects are still in the working. So on April 10th, which is a Sunday, there's going to be two wonderful recitals given by very good friends of mine, Nathan Gunn, along with John Woostman, who is a dear friend and a mentor and someone I look up to, taught me the joy and the wonderful significance of Schubert Lieder. I was fortunate to sing on his Schubert Lieder recitals. We toured to different universities, and he completed recitals of all of Schubert's Lieder through the years. And what they are doing on the 10th is at 1:30 p.m., they'll be doing Schubert's Die Schöne Mörderin. They will be doing that at the Memorial Room on campus, and then at 7:30, they'll be doing Schubert's Die Winterreise, and they'll be doing this concert in the recital hall in Smith. And we hope to have a fundraising dinner in between these two recitals. We're still working on the venue and the pricing for that. And then after, we would love to have a reception to not only celebrate these two wonderful Lieder cycles, but also Woosman's 80th birthday.
Wow.
So I hope to be raising funds for the U of I Opera Department. And in the coming year, we would love to have some alumni back of the program, great singers like Eric Halverson. I have many other friends who are out performing all around the country and internationally that would like to come back and give a series of master classes and recitals, which we would charge for, and all those funds would then go for the U of I Opera Program.
And will information about these upcoming programs be on your website?
That is something I am in the process of doing, integrating these dates as we solidify the events and the venues and the sponsors of each event.
And again, that can be found at elizabethbuckley.com. Let me take a moment just to reintroduce our guest. Elizabeth is a recent PhD graduate from the University of Illinois in music. She's a mezzo-soprano, a performer, and a director of choirs. We're talking today about how music can be used in advocacy and outreach. If you have questions or comments, do give us a call. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these programs, and you can reach us at 333-9455 if you're in the Champaign-Urbana listening area. Farther away, 1-800-222-9455. We're about halfway through our program today. Let me take just a moment to mention upcoming guests here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Next week, we'll be talking with Clayton Doffenbaugh, that's March 6th, about ecological issues. And particularly, the setting is in southern Utah, a beautiful part of the country that has been endangered, and Clayton will be talking about that. He'll be here in the studio. He'll be doing some programs in addition at Wesley United Methodist Church that weekend. And then coming up March 13, Joel Green and Lib Caldwell, two of the translators for the brand new Common English Bible, will be our guests. Lib Caldwell from Chicago Seminary there, Joel Green from Fuller Theological Seminary in California. We'll be talking about this brand new translation out just this year of the Common English Bible. Later on Keeping the Faith, we have some interesting programs. Doctor Who and the issue of genocide will be a topic we'll be talking about. A recent book on Doctor Who and philosophy has come out, and we'll be having some guests talk about that. Later on, we have a couple other musicians. In early May, we'll be talking with Somi. Local folks knew her as Laura Kakoma, now an international known singer who recently gave a series of concerts at Krannert Center. Also, John Ellis, jazz tenor sax. His group Double Wide has gotten quite well known. We'll be talking with those folks also in May. I'd like to take a moment just to mention that the University YMCA lost one of its wonderful people this last week. Ed Nestigan died at age 97. He had been at the University YMCA as program director for several decades and then went on to be the after he retired, came back and did the Bailey Scholarship Program, organized that, that gives away money to students, continues to do that, by the way. And he also helped start the Martin Luther King Scholarship Fund locally and raised money for that in its first few years. It gives money to local minority kids to go to college. That program also still continues. But I just wanted to say a couple words of tribute to Ed Nestingen, a wonderful man. He stayed in this community after he retired. He lost his wife, Ruth, back in 07. But he was a grand man and very helpful in this community in so many ways. A memorial service for Ed will be at McKinley Presbyterian Church, where he and Ruth were longtime members, on tomorrow, Monday, at 2 in the afternoon. That's at the corner of, let's see if I can remember, 5th and John Street in Champaign. A couple other words about programs coming up at the University YMCA, longtime supporters of this Keeping the Faith program. The Know Your University series is on Tuesday noons, and this 1st of March program will be Nora Lenstra from the Graduate School of Library and Information Sciences at the University of Illinois. She'll be talking about E. Black Champaign-Urbana and community informatics. That's a new word for me. Using technology and information to connect and empower. That's coming up, a free lecture at the Y on the corner of Chalmers and Wright Street, 809 South 5th. At noon this Tuesday. The Friday Forum at the Y this week, continuing the series on Americans at War, a look at the impacts of U.S. military power in the 21st century. This week, on Friday the 4th of March, Paul Deal, Henning Larsen Professor of Political Science here at the University, will be talking about U.S. peace-building efforts in Iraq and Afghanistan, success or failure. And how do we know? That's Friday at noon, a free lecture at the University Y. 337-1500 is the number to call if you want to reserve a meal at the Y Eatery. If you want to bring your own lunch, that's fine too, or simply come and hear the program. While you're there, you'll be able to see in the Y Gallery, 23 portraits by Jason Patterson of influential African-American women with roots at the university and in Champaign-Urbana. That's a show that will be at the Y through April 1st. That's also available at other times, but if you're there Tuesday or Friday, is a good time to see that. Well, let's get back to our guest today, Elizabeth Buckley. Elizabeth, sopranos are stereotyped as being temperamental, hard to deal with. In a recent book, A Liturgical Mystery, written by Mark Schweitzer, called The Alto War Tweed, he said this: "What's the difference between a soprano and a terrorist? You can negotiate with a terrorist."
Is any of that true? Oh, certainly that's true. I think to access your inner artist, you have to have a little, shall we say, I don't want to say crazy, but an emotional side to you, definitely. And perhaps that's a question you should ask my husband or any of the musicians I've worked with. I think you are constantly, as an artist, trying to temper that side of yourself to your family and to the public. And you want to be able to access that part of yourself when it is necessary. I've sung some repertoire that has taken me into places that is perhaps, shall we say, a little out of control. So definitely that needs to be a part of a person. They need to be able to access that. Overall, though, my industry has changed greatly. Whereas in the 50s and the 60s, perhaps the diva was celebrated and enjoyed. In today's world, not so much. You really have to be easy to work with. You have to be on time. You have to be well prepared. And you have to be able to fly to multiple locations and to be very trustworthy. This is a very tightly controlled industry now by agents and by directors of opera houses, and they really don't have time for people with attitudes. And I would say increasingly the people that I meet and my friends that are doing well in the industry, the performing industry, are extremely kind, extremely open, and have a real interest and a real passion for bringing the arts to schools, out to the public, and to be doing outreach with their arts. People like Masumi, with starting his Dochao group, or his series that he is running, focusing on chamber music. We're understanding as young artists, this is our time to claim our art and not to let it die off. If we continue to put on this artifice of a formality that doesn't reach people in this hip-hop, internet world, we will die off and our art form will become completely irrelevant. But when you tell people, like last year I went to sing at Edison Middle School, and the principal told me there, he said, I would guess that a number of these children have never heard classical music sung live, let alone opera. And I sang for them aria from Barbara of Seville, a Rossini opera, and it was Una Voce Poca Fa. And I told...
How does it start?
Una voce poca fa. It has this kind of quiet recit to start with. And it was really interesting because the kids were talking over me. They really
At first,
because they just weren't sure, what is this? Yeah, this is so foreign and weird.
Sure.
What's this woman doing here? Yeah. And then I put my hand out and I told them to kind of calm down. When I started the aria before, I explained it to them that this is a little somewhat bratty girl who is being housed by a guardian, and she really is tired of this. It's her time to strike out. And I said, can you relate to not being happy with your parents telling you what to do? I said, so this girl has an attitude, and she is about ready to run away with this count, Almaviva, and have her life. So look for the attitude when she says, if you touch me inappropriately, I will turn into a snake and I will bite you. And it was very cute. As I started the recit, you know, it's a little staid, and they weren't listening. And then I hit a high note, and the kids went, ooh. And then I sang another, wah, all over. And then they listened again. And then I hit a really big high note, and they screamed. They went, yes! And it was great to see that, you know, this is an old art form, perhaps, but in the day when it was composed, it was relevant and it was popular.
And it can still connect.
Exactly. This is fun. And I so enjoyed seeing those kids just erupt. And at the end, when I hit the high B flat, of course, I went crazy with it and held it way too long. But it was great because they leapt up onto their feet, screaming and clapping and loving it. And I realized in what I tell people when they say, you're an opera singer, what is that? I say, I'm a rock singer who sings without amplification. And that's what I realized. When you go to see opera, like I went to see last Sunday, Lohengrin up at the Lyric, these are highly trained singers who are like rock stars. They sing at the very edge of our capabilities vocally, and it is thrilling. And that's what I think we're lacking a lot of times with classical arts. They think that this is an old art form. We need to make it relevant and exciting. This is our responsibility.
Let's talk about different voices. Now, when we played the cut in the first half of this program from Handel, people who have never seen you perhaps were imagining from the sound of your singing voice for that Handel piece someone who is physically very large. How would you describe yourself to someone who can't see you, like listeners on the radio?
I am 5'3", about 120 pounds. So I'm of a slight stature, would I say. I don't feel that I'm that small, though. My persona in my mind is quite a bit bigger, and my voice definitely lives in that world.
But when you sing that piece from Handel's Messiah, you have one sort of personality and tone. What about when you sing this other thing you mentioned, Songs from a Mother's Heart?
Definitely. When I sing that, that is accessing more of the gentle side of my voice and that more personable side. I think what's really fun and interesting about especially the mezzo-soprano voice type is that we sing a type of repertoire that spans the pant roles in opera. So I've sung I've sung a lot of boy roles.
Uh-huh.
And then we sing a lot of goddesses and a lot of mothers and nuns. And then we sing some old ladies, too. And then the other part of what is beautiful, I think, about the mezzo voice is we sing the mother roles and the angel roles. Like in Dream of Gerontius, I've sung the angel. And in Elijah, I've sung the role of the angel.
Give us a couple lines of a lullaby.
A lullaby that I sang on this particular recital, the Songs from Mother's Heart, is the Brahms lullaby that we're also familiar with. And what we'll hear at the end probably is when we do the Brahms, you'll hear that there's a side of these particular songs. They're sung from the mother to, it's Mary singing to the baby Jesus. So you'll hear that shimmery, very intimate side of that voice.
And that's on this next mm-hmm. cut that we're ready to hear.
Yes.
And this is, again, from?
This is from Brahms's Zwei Gesange, and it is the second of the two. On March 12th, we will be singing both of them at the Indigo Gallery, and the second of the two is Geistliche Wiegenlied.
Elizabeth Buckley.
Stille, 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 Stille
We have just heard on viola, Masumi Per Rostad, on piano, DeWitt Tipton, and mezzo-soprano Elizabeth Buckley, who's our guest in the studio here today on Keeping the Faith. Elizabeth, we have a caller waiting on line one from Urbana. You're on the air. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, you picked two of my favorite composers. My question is, how universal is this music, or is it... is it appreciated around the world, or is this something that is just part of our own Western culture?
That's a very good question. What is very interesting is the amazing support for classical music that is happening in China as of recent. There is a very good push by parents to have their children learn classical piano and voice. And we're seeing amazing singers and pianists and violinists coming out of not only China, but Korea. And we're seeing also an amazing support for it in South America. Many countries in South America are opening opera houses and have wonderfully funded symphonies, and they have great music programs. I have a number of friends who have actually been recently to South America and also to China and have gone as visiting lecturers and also as guest artists. And they tell me, especially in China, that the pay is really good too. So I am very excited to see that this is happening. And I think with iTunes, the availability of classical music now for people where it used to not be available is now in the hands of many people who never have even been able to hear it until now, which is very exciting for us.
Now, Elizabeth, you give some of your music away free. You just did here on the radio. And if people go to your website, they'll find a thing they can click on to say recordings, where they can hear other pieces that you've recorded and placed free to listen to on people's computers or other ways that they can get to your website. I could do it off my iPhone, for example. But how do you make a living when you give away music free?
Well, those pieces that I have on my website are all pieces that I recorded at the U of I, so I do not own mechanical rights to those pieces. When you want to sell a property, you have to actually have mechanical rights to it. And so there are many pieces that are part of public domain, and many other pieces that the performers that are on the performance with you, if they've not signed contracts, then you cannot put that on a CD for sale.
Sure.
So how the vast majority of musicians make their living is through ticket prices, through giving live performances. And then the world that I am entering into is grant writing and also fundraising. And I recently joined the board of the East Central Illinois chapter of the Association of Fundraising Professionals and am extremely interested in how we can raise more funds for the arts. And I know this from being on the board of the Prairie Ensemble and from other organizations. Only about 30 to 40% of the ticket price of any given performance is covered, or the performance itself is covered by your ticket price. So that additional 50 to 60% of that performance is being subsidized by lovers of the arts through their donations and through their time. And so you get a wonderful group of volunteers and also people that give through donations, cash donations. So a big part of our field is fundraising. And that's the part that I'm the most interested in as of late, because I think that has a great potential to bring communities together. And the concert we did on December at our church, St. Matthew Lutheran, with the help of our local AGO chapter, American Guild of Organists, was funded buy a grant from them, and then we had matching donations from members of our church, and then we were able to provide a free concert. And I'm happy to report, as you saw, because you were so wonderful in attending, we had a full church. And so we brought that afternoon a free concert for the public funded by organizations here
in
town.
Open to the whole community.
Exactly.
And my wife and I enjoyed it very much.
Oh, thank you. And it was great because not only was that an offering for people in the community, but the people playing on that and singing in it were from other churches and from other organizations. So I find right now, this point in my life, I am extremely fascinated by the power of music and the performing arts and visual arts to bring large groups of people in, hundreds of people at a given time, in conjunction to enjoy together the experience of art. And I think in this contentious era we live in, where we are at war in various areas and in conflict and turmoil, and even in our own country we're having very, very serious issues, music is one of those things that can bring us together.
And I remember, of course, Daniel Perino using, of all things, Dixieland jazz in the 70s to bring students and faculty together at the University of Illinois when they were warring with one another over all kinds of political and economic issues. But he could bring people together to start talking by using a bunch of retired faculty musicians playing Dixieland.
Isn't that wonderful?
Who would have thought it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're down to our last 4 or 5 minutes. We could still squeeze in another phone call if somebody wants to call. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455 if it's long distance. And, of course, if you've missed part of this program or want to hear other Keeping the Faith programs, they are archived at will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And just leave the G out of keeping. That's the way this program began a dozen years ago, and so we're still having that informal spelling of keeping the faith. Our guest is Elizabeth Buckley. Elizabeth, you sang this Brahms piece from that very romantic era, Geistliches Wiegenlied. Tell us some of the meaning of the words.
The meaning of the words are, it's Mary singing to the baby Jesus, but I think of myself singing to my children, and the feeling of wanting your child to sleep. And these words are, you who hover around these palms in night and wind, you holy angels, silence the treetops, my child is sleeping. And then the song goes on to talk about the child of heaven endures the discomfort. Oh, how tired he has become of earthly sorrow. Oh, now in sleep, gently softened, his pain fades. Silence the treetops, my child is sleeping. And so in the very closing line, my child is sleeping.
And we have another caller from Champaign. Yes, you're on the air with Elizabeth Buckley.
Hi. I wondered if you had an idea out of your repertoire, if you had one chance to reach out to some children, what song would you choose and why?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. One of my favorite songs to sing is from Dumbo, and it's Baby Mine. And I love the sentiment that she sings this to her child. And as a mother, I know what it feels like when your child is not being included or isn't being accepted. And I think even as adults, we understand that feeling. And I think if through our music we can bring people together. And that song in particular always brings tears to my eyes because I think if we sing to each other that clear, beautiful message that you are my child and we all are each other's children because each child that is born belongs, I think, to the greater human family, to all of the world.
Well, that's a perfect note for us to end with. Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Elizabeth Buckley, mezzo-soprano. You can hear some other songs of hers at her website, elizabethbuckley.com. Buckley is spelled B-U-C-K-L-E-Y. She's the recent winner of a important Barry Alexander International Vocal Competition, was able to have her debut performance at Carnegie Hall in New York City. Happy to have had her on the program this afternoon. Coming up next week here on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Clayton Doffenbaugh about the ecology, particularly in southern Utah, a particularly beautiful part of the United States. The following week, our guests will be Joel Green, a professor from Fuller Theological Seminary in California, and Lib Caldwell, professor from a seminary in Chicago. We'll be talking with them about their work, with many others, translating the New English Version of the Bible, the Common English Bible. We'll be hearing them read sections from that, and people can respond as to what they think of this new translation. Coming up later in April, we'll be hearing from a new book on Doctor Who and philosophy, particularly a couple guys who wrote a chapter on Doctor Who and the issue of genocide. Later, Charlene Watts will be a guest talking about Beyond Partnership, and Laura Kakoma, Somi, will be singing some of her music inspired by various countries in Africa. That'll be May 1st, and on May 8th, John Ellis playing tenor sax, whose tenor sax is heard at the beginning and ending of this program. He's a jazz musician in New York, and well, he plays all around the world, but mainly in New York and Louisiana. That's right, with the group Double Wide. Coming up the Y this week, I remind listeners of Paul Deal speaking on Friday at noon on U.S. peacebuilding efforts and how it can be measured. And Tuesday noon, we'll be hearing Nora Lenstra from Library and Information Sciences talking about using technology and information to connect and empower. That's at the University Y in Champaign at noon on Tuesdays and Fridays. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3.